Okay, so we don't have a long shear because we did have in the morning. We're going to have soon. So, okay. So, as I said, Gardumin has two parts to the sugya. We're going to pick up on already tomorrow, which is much more complicated, but I've tried to pick out the basic positions, is what exactly does Gardumin look like in the context of Tzitzis. But before we get to Tzitzis locally, what we started with yesterday is that this entire notion that you can have Tzitzis which rip and are still kosher despite the fact that they no longer have the amount with which you would have started. Let's put it that way, right? How much you have to have is exactly the machloket in the Gemara, but this notion that you can have remnants and they'll still be kosher, the Gemara on Lamed Hey tells us that that's only true of tzitzit and, well, not just of tzitzit. It says it's true of tzitzit because it's tashmishe mitzvah, but not true of the straps of tefillin because they are tashmishe kedusha. And the question we wanted to deal with is what is the difference between them. So just to recap what we saw. So one possibility was in Mukhe Yosef. Mukhe Yosef said, look, I don't understand this. Either you need the amount or you don't need the amount. If you need the amount, then you always need the amount. If you don't need the amount, then you never need the amount. So how can Gemara say that there's this category called Gardumin of things that you need at the beginning, you don't need it at the end? And then Mukhe Yosef's answer fundamentally is, I don't understand this Svara, and therefore I will write it out of existence. I will say that it's not what it looks like. You think that there's such a thing as something that actually needs an amount at the beginning and doesn't by the end? That's not true. Tashmishe Kedusha need an amount, and that's why they always need an amount. Tashmishe Mitzvah, they never need an amount. Why do you need an amount at the beginning? Hiddur Mitzvah, it's just beautifying it. But fundamentally, this is tzitzit, this is whatever, whether or not it has the right amount. And he basically rewrites the category, because conceptually, what drives the Mukhe Yosef is the belief that if you need an amount, you need an amount. You don't need an amount, you don't need an amount. There is no such middle category.
Is the amount referring to again?
Size, in this case.
How long the tzitzit needs to be.
How long the tzitzit, which we'll get to. How long the tzitzit needs to be. How long the tefillin straps need to be. How big the lulav, esrog, shofar, all the things we discussed, need to be. That is one possibility. That is, however, the minority position, because that's not what it sounds like in the Gemara to use it. It sounds like the Gemara actually introduces a category called Gardumin, which means stubs, meaning that there is an amount, and you actually need to initiate the process with that amount, but if you don't have the amount by the end, it is fine. Now, why would that be the case? So, Rav Chanan quotes from Rishua Zelig that there's a difference. By Tashmishe Kedusha, the shiur, the amount, is in the performance of the mitzvah, and therefore, I need to wear tefillin of a certain shiur. And if they're of a smaller size, I'm not performing the mitzvah. As opposed to by Tashmishe Kedush Mitzvah, he says, it's not about a shear in the performance of the mitzvah, it's a shear in the object. And once you say it's a shear in the object, you can entertain the possibility that you only need that amount when creating the object, but not subsequently when using the object, which justifies allowing the object even when it is no longer the right size. We noted, as Rav Chanan did, that Rav Yeshua Zelig is correct in his description of the sugya, but does virtually nothing in terms of right justification. He doesn't actually explain the case. So we looked at different models. We saw one model who says, this isn't really about Tashmishe Kedusha versus Tashmishe Mitzvah. It's about whether there is a chiyuv asiya or not. In a case where there's a chiyuv asiya, you are obligated to make the object. That means that the act of making it is halachically significant, and therefore I can entertain the possibility that once it's made, it maintains its identity even when the original size has been minimized. And that's the way, who takes it, Rafi? Rafi takes it that way, or the Chassam Sofer, otherwise known as Rafi, otherwise known as the Chassam Sofer, Moshe Sofer. Who says, therefore, he argues that by tzitzis, the reason it's true is because there's a mitzvah to make the pasuk describes making it, which means that that's a halachically significant act, but argues that by shofar or by lulav and esrog wouldn't be true because those are just objects. You don't have to make the object, and therefore, it must be that they are more like tefillin, where the object needs to maintain its integrity, its full integrity, throughout the performance of the mitzvah. What you need to explain to the Chasam Sofer is why then, by Tashmishi Kedusha, is that not true? He doesn't explain that equation, he just explains, right? He limits the halacha, he doesn't explain why Tashmishi Kedusha are in that category. The second explanation we saw yesterday was from Reb Elchanan Wasserman. Reb Elchanan Wasserman argues that the difference is as follows. By Tashmishi Mitzvah, you need the object to perform the mitzvah. By Tashmishi Kedusha, you need the object which is holy to perform the mitzvah. And that's part of the definition, is that it's a holy object. And Reb Elchanan argues that while the object may maintain its identity even after been shrunken in size, it can't maintain its holiness. And therefore, any mitzvah that requires Kedusha, meaning the object that is required to perform the mitzvah is Tashmishi Kedusha, needs to maintain its full size so that the object will be Kadosh, right? And if it's Kadosh, then you can perform it. And therefore, by Tzitzis, you need Tzitzis, but not Tzitzis, which are Kadosh. By Tfilin, you need Tfilin, which are Kadosh. And that's why he thinks it really is a clean split between Tashmishi Mitzvah and Tashmishi Kedusha.
So the point to him, you have Gardelian, like,
good, and we noted yesterday that based on this type of svara, you could argue on the Chasam Sofer and say that maybe by shofar or lulav and esrog, you could have gardumin. And in fact, as Reb Elchanan notes, the Truman Hadeshen says that explicitly, at least in the context of esrog, because he was asked that weird shaila, if you remember, if we have a bunch of communities that have an esrog, they want to share it, so in advance they cut it up into little pieces, and by the time you get to Sukkot, it's not kibitzes, it's kasher. And he says, look, it's not, because that's not called gardumen. Gardumen means a stub, a remnant. If you never intended on using the esrog in its full size, this isn't a remnant, this is the full size. This is your esrog. That's a problem. You can't have a remnant of that. But let's say one person had had an esrog, and it had shrunk to less than it can be. So what would it be, according to him? It'd be kasher, right? Or if it got bitten into or something, it'd be kasher, which is surprising, but it's clear that the Truman Hadeshen, and he says why? Because of Gardumin, which means that fundamentally the Truman Hadeshen holds that yes, Gardumin applies by anything which is Tashmishi Kedusha. Would he apply it by shofar? Maybe. What would that mean? I don't know, right? Meaning once I start blowing the shofar, if it shrinks, then I'm fine, I can continue the kolot, something like that. But that is that. Now, that's what we were up to yesterday. Hopefully that summary made it a little bit clear. So if you go to Reb Elchanan, though, Reb Elchanan notes that if this is the case, if this is the real issue, then we've already... So he said, maybe I'll give you an interesting nafkamina. What if I could give you a case of Tashmishi Kedusha, where it maintains its Kedusha even without its original size or quality? Would that type of gardumen be kosher by Tashmishi Kedusha? What do you think?
What kind of...
if I could come up with a case. If I could come up with a scenario, would that be the case? Yes or no?
Where
if I had a Tashmishi Kedusha, where I managed to have a stub which maintains its holiness, would I be able to be Yotze, according to Reb Elchanan?
Yeah.
But ostensibly, yes.
I was thinking about Ezo. There's part of that says make.
Correct, and we talked about the possibility that maybe Ezo, right? Ezo, we have to judge. Right? Each one of these, I can explain it. We saw, they say, maybe Ezo is different because it's Taros, who knows? But they didn't necessarily have a good explanation for it. So here is the scenario that Reb Elchanan comes up with, because what is the scenario? It's a very strange scenario. But here's what he comes up with. So you look back at Reb Elchanan, the Kovet Shirma number 4, in the middle by Sefer Yerayim. He says, Sefer Yerayim. Who's the Yerayim? Nate, where's my biography
light,
guy?
Light.
Reb Elazar of Metz?
Oh, yeah.
He's a Balat Tosvot from Germany. Good. So what does he say? Sefer Yerayim mitzvah tefillin. He quotes the Yerayim, who says as follows. Im nichtevu ha'otiyot kedinan v'nimchku o nikre'u. Maitinan yinuka. Remember the halacha that we saw of the child reading it? Maitinan yinuka?
Yeah.
Right? Yinuka delotav, right? Delochachem velotipesh.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The reading of the child all the way to the beginning of the year?
Yeah.
So the Yerayim says as follows. Let's say the letters were written and they either got somewhat erased, right? Not fully erased. It got somewhat erased or somewhat broken. So you bring a child. V'ikara lo kemei ikara shiari mitzvahein ukshirin. So if he can read it, so the phrase he uses is shiari mitzvah. It is the remnant of a mitzvah, which is often a phrase which is used interchangeably in some of the poskim, at least, to explain gardumin, because shiari mitzvah seems to be a similar principle, which is when something is the leftover of the object of mitzvah, it's still kasher. So what does Rav Chanan argue? Right? You could have said that why is a faded letter that a child can read still kasher? Why could you have said that it's kasher?
Because it's still,
you could have, what could you have said? You could have just said, because it's still a letter. It's a lighter letter, but it's a letter. But what does the Aram argue?
No, it's not.
No, it's shiari mitzvah, which makes it sound like this, had I written it in such a faded way, it would not have been kasher. It would not have been kasher.
Why?
Because he calls it shiarim. He said it's kasher because it's a remnant. Right? You could have said it's kasher because it's just a faded letter. But the phraseology of the Urayim is that why is a faded letter kasher? It sounds like it'd be pasul according to the Urayim. But what does he say? It's kasher because
it's
a remnant. So what did Elchanan Medayik from here?
If you write it as a faded?
No! He said if you wrote it and then it faded. Kasher because it's a leftover. It's Yarim. So that's what Rav Chanan argues. He says the Urayim seems to think that the reason that which a child can make out is kasher is not because that proves that it's a letter. Right? Meaning, you could just say, what does a kid
Wait,
do?
But this is Tashi.
One second. You could have said that a kid reads it. That proves that it's a letter, and that's why it's kasher. But the Urayim says no. It's shiare. Right? Shiare mitzvah, it's a remnant, which makes it sound like he thinks it's the equivalent, essentially, of gardumin. That it's only... It wouldn't have been kasher if you'd written it that way, with a little bit of a crack and a little bit of this. It's kasher because... It was once a kosher letter,
and now it's
readable, so it's left over.
Wait, but this is Tashmisha
Kedusha. So that's what I just said. So Rav Chanan says, how could it be? So Rav Chanan says as follows. Mashma dechsheran humishum gardumin. It sounds like the reason it's kosher is because it's gardumin, it's a stub, but it's still kosher. But kosher! He said, what do you mean? Daha b'tashmisha kedusha lekechshera de gardumin. But this is Tashmisha Kedusha, it's a sefer Torah. But he says, "Wofi hanal dibeemet linin hechsher and chiluk bein mitzvah lekedusha v'gam betashmi she kedusha mahani time de gardum nachsheran elu the psul nemishum chisar and kedusha." He says, "But listen to my lamdus. What did he say? Why does gardumin not work by tashmi she kedusha? Not because theoretically the category wouldn't work, but because." It needs, Tashmisha mitzvah need one thing, which is to maintain their identity as an object.
Yeah.
Tashmisha kedusha need two things, to maintain their identity as the original object and maintain their sanctity. But what would happen if I could create a scenario in which a Tashmisha of kedusha would maintain its identity and maintain its kedusha? So then, if that's the real rule, would it be kosher even by Tashmisha kedusha?
Yeah.
Yes. So he says, listen, Yesh Lomar, Levi Majgoza Rajba, he said, the Rashba argues that the letters of the Sefer Torah are what's called a Davar HaNadur, meaning they themselves, I won't get into all that, but meaning they have sanctity. Which means that they were sanctified by your mouth, because he calls it Davar HaNadur, which is something I can be matpis from, but I can make a neder by extending a neder from something which already exists. I'm not going to go through all of that and explain that, but he says the fact that you can spread the Kedusha verbally, right? I can make a neder based on the letters of the Sefer Torah, prove that their Kedusha comes from Peh, which we've talked about. Remember we talked about the possibility that that's why you have to verbalize the words as you read it? Remember we saw those sheetot that maybe, remember this? Right, that the reason you have to verbalize the words you write in Sefer Torah is because you're sanctifying it verbally. So the Rashba clearly holds that way. So he says, okay. And anything which is imbued with Kedusha verbally, it never loses its Kedusha lo'olam. Just like a carbon which dies, there are many who say that even biblically it's prohibited, even though it's dead, because once it was sanctified verbally, it maintains that sanctity, dead or alive. And therefore he says, even their stubs, right, the dead animal, that's a pale remnant of the animal, but it's still kadosh. Mashen came virtue to in kedushin mikach kedusha spell. It's your Torah that you chudon lekach. Kedemuchach be Gemara the Tali be plug the dasman amilta kmotachrich amid esher mitchadesh alein b'chol shata ushata adeshiyesh lein Torahan hatzarach lekedusha tanuk shenit batel. So he comes up the following chiddush. He says, straps of tefillin, what makes them kadosh is that they are designated for their purpose. And designated for purpose requires an amount.
Straps of tefillin, when they rip, is it any amount that they rip, or less than the shear that makes it kosher?
Less than the shear that makes it kosher. So he says as follows. He says, look, straps of tefillin, they were never sanctified. What made them holy is that
the box.
They're attached to the tefillin, they're used for the tefillin, and they're the right size for the tefillin, right? They are the right parameters. And therefore, as soon as they're ripped, their kedusha disappears, memela, you can't use them. But he says the letters of the Sefer Torah are a weird middle case, where their sanctity comes from, according to Rashba, that I verbally sanctify the letters. And now, they retain their Kedusha always.
So it doesn't make a difference that they kosher...
So, correct. So according to him, the way he understands the Urayim is that because their sanctity is given verbally, and therefore that sanctity will never leave, Mimela, it always remains Kadosh. And therefore it can have Gardumin, where it can have a case where the object... The integrity of the object has been compromised, but not fully compromised, and therefore it maintains a minimal identity, right? It's readable. But the real reason it remains kadosh is because...
You verbalized it.
Because the kedusha remained, and there's enough of a stub that it maintains its identity, even though it sounds like, had I written the letter this faded, that wouldn't have been kosher. And therefore, Rav Chanan argues this relatively wild chiddush, right, which is... If the real rule of Gardumin is Tashmi, anything which merely needs to maintain its identity as an object can have Gardumin. And that which requires sanctity can't, because you can have an object that has its identity but doesn't have its Kedusha, and by Tashmi Shei Kedusha, you need the object to be Kadosh in order to be Yotzei. If that's the real rule, then if I can come up with a scenario in which something maintains its identity and maintains its Kedusha, even by Tashmishi Kedusha, then Gardumin will apply to it. And therefore, he argues that's what the Urayim is saying, that faded letters, the fact that they're faded but still legible means they've maintained their identity. And because the nature of Kedusha Peh is that it's never alienated, even when it's just completely destroyed, means that it's still Kadosh. So as long as a kid can read it, it maintains its identity as an object, meaning as a letter. Because it was sanctified verbally, it maintains its Kedusha. It has the two factors. So even though it's Tashmishi Kedusha, it's going to be Kadosh, unlike the straps of the Tefillin, which maintain their Kedusha based on the fact that they are...
Where does he learn out that Sefer Torah is, gets its Kedusha?
From the Rashba. From the Rashba.
And the Rashba gets his own Kedusha.
I mean, he's explaining the Urayim. He's saying, according to the Rashba, I can explain the Urayim.
I mean, that's the only way that would work.
Correct.
If you
correct.
Get it
correct. Correct. Correct.
Okay.
The tzarich lahavin l'rav papa the sfira l'mahani efsher dagumin gam b'dashmishi kedusha. Now he said in the Gemara, Rav Papa seems to have been the outlier. Right? We were analyzing the maskana. The way we pass, which is dashmishi kedusha, don't have gardumin, but Rav Papa seems to think it does. Amay nagam alti davgar tzur, but my lomer gardumei tefillin lo mezuzak sheirin. He said, why did Rav Papa seem to think that by the straps in your tefillin you could have it? Remember we saw the Gemara, right? Rav Papa had said, Gardume Ritzua Ksheira. Right?
Yeah.
We paskin against it. But now Rav Chanan wants to come back and say, okay, so far today and yesterday, right? Today, yesterday, we've explained why Tashmishi Kedusha in general don't have it. But according to Rav Papa, how do you explain that Gardume Tashmishi Kedusha are kasher? And he said, in order to answer the question, I need to ask, once you think that's true, why did he say it by Ritzuot? Why didn't he say it by the tefillin or the mezuzah? Right? Why did he come up specifically with the case of the straps? Why was that his paradigm? Shmuel Chanan says, What do you think he's going to say?
The actual Tishmish HaKedusha is on the tefillin, but since the straps themselves don't have it, but they're attached to something that does.
So maybe you'd say, right, you could have said, look, even he's going to agree that Garduman only applies by things that are like attached to Kedusha, not the most holy object itself. There the standards are higher, right? You could have come up with something like that. But he takes a Chassam Sofer-esque direction. And he says, wait a second. Remember what we said yesterday? That the Chassam Sofer said the real rule is not what? Kedusha versus mitzvah, what is it?
It's making it versus...
Right, things that where the making it is significant in terms of size and things where it's...
Not.
So he comes up with the following chiddush. He said, you know what? Maybe the reason Rav Papa thinks that it does work by straps is because he takes the Chassam Sofer one step farther. And he says, you think that by Dvar Mishe B'Kedusha, by Tashmish HaKedusha, you can't, it doesn't maintain its identity? Once it's lost its size, that's not true. Anytime making the object is significant, it maintains its identity. Aye, then why by the straps and not by tefillin itself? So what does he say? He says, look, because the halacha is something that needs a shear, so you start with a shear, and after that you can rely on a stub. That makes sense if it's not exactly a chassam sofer. It's not if there's a pasuk. He says, how do I know what's going to be kosher according to Rav Papa? If it has an amount, because then you can say it has an amount to start, and then you can just sort of continue by momentum. Aval tefillin mezuzah ein lam shir kamiyeh godlan. Dipachot mishevrat l'mitzvabachit. Inoshenu mitoran atzarachlan. Inyachim tam gardumin. He said, because tefillin and tzitzis, we don't discuss their amounts. Right? The notion that something can be kosher even when it's missing its amount hangs on the amount having been significant, so then you can have a remnant of that. But by tefillin and mezuzah, there is no size. And therefore, it makes no sense to talk about a remnant of size if there was no significance to the size to begin with. What are you going to say? Right? I mean, his point is the Urim is really weird. Right? The Urim's gardumen seems to be a remnant of quality. But he said, that's really weird.
Does that work with Sefer Torah?
Well, so that's what, meaning he said, right, the Urim is weird, who thinks that the letters are sort of gardumen, because that's a remnant, not of size, but of quality. But he's saying, the pashtos, the easiest way of understanding is, to the extent that halacha exists, it exists in amounts, right, quantities. You can say, I start with one quantity, and then, you know, look, it's the same way, right, no one, right, like, think about it, right, you have a car. Right, if you make it, and then you know you have some dents in the car, right? So you say, okay, it was a car, it had its integrity, and now, like, you know, it's missing a headlight here, it's missing whatever, right? It's still a car, right? If you built a car and you left out the fourth wheel, you wouldn't say this is a car missing a wheel. You'd say you haven't finished, right? Right? But
then you go to Lakewood and you get
for God's sake. That was really unnecessary. Now this is already going to get to our next point. He says, keep this in mind when you get to the Garduman and Tzitzis, because we're going to see that there's going to be a machloket. And again, I want you to see this inside tomorrow, whenever we have, tomorrow we have shir? Or tomorrow?
Tomorrow's the
Teal. Wait, what's today? Tuesday?
Yeah.
Tomorrow's the Teal. So Thursday? When you'll see that most of the Rishonim think that Gardumin, that the extent we're talking about, are from the Beged, right? Rashi thinks that the halacha of Gardumin is from the knot. Right? How much after the knot has to be left?
The last knot.
Well, we'll get into what knot, because Rashi also has interesting in terms of knots. But he says, right? And therefore he says, hold this in mind, I'm not going to read the last line. I'm not going to read the last line now, Rav Chanan. But he says, this question of what is Gardumin? Is Gardumin about Shiurim, or what exactly is it? That is necessary to understand the Machlokes of Rashi and the other Rishonim, of where does Gardumin come from? And again, we'll hold this thought of Rav Chanan. I want you to read the Rishonim before you see that line of Rav Chanan, but keep that thought in mind for when you get there. Okay. Just turn to the end. Look at number 7. This is a tshuva of the Marami Rutenberg. Okay? Marami Rutenberg says as follows. Utfilin shahayu mirubaot וכשנש ישנו נתמחו ואינה מרובעת צריך לחזור ולעשותן מרובעות. Tefillin that were square, and then they get old, and they're not square anymore, so what do you have to do?
Square them off.
V'tzitzit ha'osuyan kitikuno l'mala min ha'kesher godel l'mata mishalosh v'nikra talit el'yon v'kari l'mata mikesher godel mutter k'damri imperak pelet chazir v'sama l'karna d'glima d'sata v'chuli ha'chadas yed mar. But by tzitzis, if you made it the right size and then it breaks, it's kosher, we know that. V'taima. And now he says, why? And this is back to what we said earlier. Now
what
you see it?
That
Tzitzis
just said he
should have
strings.
Good. So he, but he basically says what the Chumash Sofer said. He said, klomar b'shar asiya dafkid kapit kra. And he says, in other words, what the Chumash Sofer said, and he said, but he trucks it up to specific halachot. He said, by Tzitzis, the why does it only matter when you make it? Because the Pasuk says, Vasu. Aval tefillin mirubat halacha Moshe Mitzrayim v'kol shaita bina shiu mirubaot.
It should be the opposite.
No.
It should matter by tzitzis because it says vasu by tzitzis.
And therefore, it has to have the shear when you make it because the shad asiyah is the critical moment. No, but by tefillin,
shear by tefillin. That if it's
no, you're right. It's not about shear. It's about squareness, right? And he says the squareness is a halacha that it must always be square.
Right.
But by tzitzis, the halacha is that when you make it, and again, this is sort of matim to the Chasam Sofer, but you see that there is a hint to the Chasam Sofer. There seems to be already the Chasam Sofer is found, at least version of it, or the basic idea in this Maram Nirenberg.
Which means there is a specific shear to tzitzis.
Correct, but he says, but what you learn from that is that the shear is only b'shad asiyah. No, he says only b'shad asiyah. At the time of making it, it has to be tzitzit. After that, you can have a remnant.
Oh, okay, fine.
Right, but on by, like, tefillin.
Oh, it's not that it should be this year, it's that at the time of making it, you should make it this year. Afterwards, okay, fine.
Okay, and then if you look in the Karanor, he says, V'im kena mailo kamar ashas l'chalik v'hem l'inyan gardu meitzit mishum d'vashad asi ayah b'shira. And elevad emuchem, he said, Tashmishi yikidusha v'koshin yikidusha atma kol ochot shem v'en tzarech shiyel olam b'tikunam v'davar pashu b'in machlogat v'achane mashu b'de'el kol zman v'pnei tabla kehme v'shira v'tzuot Rush, etc. He says, the Karen Ora argues on this model, right? And he says, it doesn't seem to be true because this is not the distinction the Gemara draws. Right? The Gemara doesn't say it's the difference is like the Chum Sofer and the Maram Rittenberg, whether it says a Sia or not. Sounds like it's really Teshmishi Kedushin for Teshmishi Mitzvah, and that would push us in the other direction. Okay, the last Svara. That I want you to see, I just made it easy for you and I put it here in English, rather than have you find the Hagot Radal.
Ah, it's okay.
So this is one more model. He says, it's not clear, however, why there's reason to differentiate between the terms of Gardumin. Why should the fact that Tzitzis and Ezo Bartish Mishe Mitzvah and Shabbos Vilna Shabbos Kedusha make a difference regard to Gardumin? This is the summary from dafyomi.co.il. So the Hagot Radal, which is also quoted in the Achiezer, yeah, so he answers another question, asks another question, and uses the answer to explain the difference. And this is what he says, and this is Rafi's question. He says, there are many other Teshmishe Mitzvah, like Tzitzis and Ezov and Ritzuz, have minimum requirements of side, which are not valid if they're cut short. For example, the Lulav is a minimum shear, but does not remain a valid Lulav, notwithstanding maybe the hints from Truz Hadeshen. Similarly, the Shofar is a minimum shear, and if part of it is cut off, it does not remain valid. What is the difference between Teshmishe Mitzvah of Tzitzis and Ezov, and their Gardumin are valid? The Radal answers this question based on the words of the Mukhe Yosef. So he follows the Mukhe Yosef. But this is how he explains the Mukhe Yosef. Look at the last paragraph here, right? He explains the Mukhe Yosef a little bit differently than we did and gives yet another model here. He says, the Radal explains the words of the Mukhe Yosef as follows. The shear of Tzitzis, Ezev, and Ritzuz, the tefillin, is only midrabanan because of Idr Mitzvah. With Halacha midrabanan, one may be lenient and consider the item valid when one loses its shear of Hidr, right? He says the real difference is not Lechatchila b'dievet, he thinks is D'oraisa versus D'rabbanan. That's how he understands Hidr Mitzvah. The Hidr Mitzvah is D'rabbanan. I don't think this is a good read, but I want you to know that this is what he says. In this respect, however, there's a difference between Teshmishe Mitzvah, for which one may be lenient, and Teshmishe Kedusha, for which one may not be lenient due to its status of Kedusha. This explains what the Gemara differentiates between Teshmishe Mitzvah of Tzitzis and Ezov and Teshmishe Kedusha of Ritzuos of Tefillin. The Radal answers the question from other Teshmishe Mitzvah, such as Lulav and Shofar, as follows. The Shurim of Lulav and Shofar are Midaraisa, and therefore it's not possible to lean with regard to their Shurim and to say that the Gardumin are valid, even though they are Teshmishe Mitzvah. Only Teshmishe Mitzvah, which have Shurim that are Midarabanan, because of Hidr, are valid when the Shurim are less than only Gardumin remain. So that's how he understands it. The real difference is just Daraisa versus Darabanan, that anything which is Daraisa, it's a real Shir, anything which is Darabanan, we can be Mekel and only require the shear at the beginning. Again, I see no indication that that's what anybody means. Not the Nukei Yosef, not... Definitely not the Kovet Shirim, Shumas Hadesha, and Chassam Sofer, Maram Mirtenberg, Yireim, etc. But again, we've seen the model, so now, just to summarize them, we've seen Nemuke Yosef Pshat is real shear versus hider shear. The way the Radal understands him is Daraisa versus Darabanan. Daraisa needs constant shear, Darabanan only needs initial shear. And then we saw Rabbi Yeshua Zelig, which is mitzvot that require a shear perpetually, and those that only need it to create the identity of an object, which is surely descriptive, but may not be sufficient. Maram Rutenberg, Chassam Sofer, slightly different versions, that the way we know is things where the asiya is important, that means that the shear is important, chas asiya, but not later on. That's really the difference. Rav Elchanan says the difference is objects that mean in identity as the object, or those that also need Kedusha, because Kedusha requires constant shear, and not just initial definition. Based on that, he entertains the possibility that if I could come up with something that maintains both its identity and its Kedusha, so then it would be kosher, and that's how he understands Yireim by faded letters. And the last point that we saw was that with all of this, this is all to explain the way we paskin, but there is the other sheet in the Gemara, which is Rav Papa, who says Gardumei Ritzua are indeed kosher. And Rav Elchanan posits essentially an expansion of Maram Mirtenberg Chassam Sofer, which is that maybe what he thinks is that anything that requires a size always just means size when it's created, and after that you can deal with residual sizes being kosher based on the din of Gardumin. But when you're talking about something where the size is not important, other things are important, squareness and, you know, clarity and things like that, there you can't talk about residual squareness, either square or not, right? You can't say, look, it was created and now it's a little bit shorter, but it's still, right? You think about it, right? To put his svar a little bit differently, right? If you have a bunch of fabric on the floor, you call it fabric, right? If you look at something and it's a shredded shirt, right? Even though it may not look particularly more coherent than a bunch of fabric, you call it a shredded shirt, right? Or a worn out shirt or something like that, because once something was, you know, right?
Former shirt,
right? A former shirt, but it's still a shirt, something, right? Something that. And it makes sense that when things, right, once something has an identity, right, you can talk about remnants, residual things. It's much harder when something hasn't, right, when that's not the you know, you can't say something is a faded square, right? It's square or it's not square, right? You look at a square that only has three sides, and, you know, one got cut off, you call it a triangle, right? Like, you know, right? Or whatever, an open-sided, right? You call it a, you know, a U or whatever, right? A boxed U, right? Whatever. You don't call it a square missing a side. That's not what it is, right? Like, size lends itself more to, like, right? I have a shirt and it got cut off a few inches, so maybe I won't wear it because, you know, it'll come up over here and, you know, I don't, you know, think that the style of leaving your midriff uncovered is a proper style, right? But it's still a shirt, you know? Taraya, some people think that you're supposed to wear shirts. They're under the misimpression that you're supposed to wear shirts. They're wrong. But that's,
Don't do it.
You unbutton buttons, like, so you can see their chest. Like,
or whatever the case may be. Oh, you can fault. But right, no one does that by a square and says, oh, this is a residual square. That's just not how things work. So that is perhaps, and that's how Rav Elchanan explains Rav Papa, which is that by Ritzuot, maybe he thinks that, look, Ritzuot have a size, and therefore I can say, once it was the right size, so, you know, you keep cutting. Okay, it's Ritzuot. Right, but by tefillin, it's about squareness or something like that. That doesn't make any sense. It's not about size. It's about other things, and they don't lend themselves to, you know. It's, are you ever, you know the kids' book, Something from Nothing? Do you know this?
Yeah,
this
yeah,
is like,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
So this is essentially, right, a version of what's going on in Gardumin, right? Is that the grandfather, for those who don't know the story, but, right, the grandfather makes him, right, he starts with a blanket, and then the blanket fades, so he says, oh, throw it out. He says, no, you can, right, you can make something out of it, right? And it's still, at some level, that thing which his father, you know, his grandfather gave him, it becomes the vest, it eventually it's a button, and then he loses the button, and then you say, well, you can't make something from nothing, and then he writes a story, because you can make, you know, a story out of the history of it, fine. But the point is, right, that's really what Gardumin sort of is, right, is this notion that we can maintain its identity once it had that status. Okay, so let us take a little bit of break.